In American history, the role of the First Lady, the spouse of the President, which has to date always been a woman, has evolved from a largely ceremonial position to one of significant influence. Many of these women have shaped US government policy and led social movements. Colin Flynn now takes a closer look at this American institution and how it has transformed over time from the early days of Martha Washington.
We knew we had to fill a gap in academic literature, and that we talk about history in our country, in the United States. We talk about inclusive history, but if we don't include the story of these women and the contributions that they made as partners to the presidency, then we are not telling our full story.
Anita McBride was the chief of staff at the White House for Laura Bush between 2005 and 2009.
George always says he's delighted to come to these press dinners. Baloney.
Now she's published a book entitled U.S. First Ladies, Making History and Leaving Legacies, looking at the lives of America's first ladies, going all the way back to the Washingtons in 1789.
George Washington understood from the beginning when he became president that his new role as president of a new United States was a two-person job.
For Martha Washington, her role in that two-person job was undefined. So really they had to decide what the role of the president's wife was as they went along. She'd been born in 1731 in Virginia, and before her marriage to George Washington, she was a wealthy widow who managed a large estate. So when George Washington was elected as the nation's first president, he was now head of government, but also head of state. A role he decided to delegate to his wife, Martha.
And lucky for him, because she was a very experienced hostess. So the role of diplomacy and how now the burden of setting precedent for this role was Martha Washington.
And we take it so much for granted now, the role of the First Lady. But back then, there was no such title even of First Lady. She was Lady Washington.
That's right. She was Lady Washington.
The title of First Lady didn't even appear until 1849 at the funeral of First Lady Dolly Madison. She was the wife of James Madison, the fourth president of the United States, and was really the first to use hospitality at the White House as a tool for diplomacy.
She felt as this new nation, our nation, the United States, was being built, it was important for it to be seen at a level of stature equal to many countries around the world that were more established and didn't know what to make of this new democratic republic where actually the people are in charge and not a monarchy.
Dolly Madison would invite opposing political sides to the White House for functions and social events, always making sure that everyone saw her, but more importantly, that she got to see and talk to everyone else.
And she'd make herself, if I can say, she'd make herself known in the rooms that were so filled with people. They were actually called squeezes because you had to squeeze yourself in there. But she would wear very colorful clothes and wear a big turban with a big plume. And she would work the room. She would find out pieces of information. She would bring that information to her husband. You know, her husband appreciated, President Madison appreciated her social graces, but it was truly her political astuteness that he valued.
And Anita, I'm wondering, was it always welcomed? Because you think of societal norms of the time and women being told to stay in your place, and her husband is the elected official, she is not.
Great question. I think the fact that there still is no position description to this day in 2024, so it's a very fine line that a first lady has always in our country had to walk. And when they have crossed it, it didn't always go over very well. And they're certainly the most powerful of all first ladies in our history was Edith Wilson, who for 17 months really ran the government behind the scenes while her husband, who had had a bad stroke, you know, was recuperating. And we would never see anything like this in modern times. Of course, the extreme overreach in terms of power.
After the 25th president of the United States, William McKinley, was shot dead, the third US president to be assassinated, it was his vice president, Theodore Roosevelt, at the age of only 42, became the youngest person ever to take the presidency.
I believe again that the American people are as a whole capable of self-control and of learning by their mistakes.
His wife, Edith, was reluctant to take on so much responsibility, but would end up making one of the greatest contributions to the role. At the beginning of the 20th century, when we talk about Edith Roosevelt, tell me a bit about her and her impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, Edith Roosevelt was the first lady of the 20th century. She moves into the White House with five rambunctious children. The White House at the time was still home and office, the actual White House structure itself. And so there was no room for the president and his staff to be on the same floor anymore. So she was really a driving force behind resurrecting plans that had been there but never executed on to expand the White House, create an office wing. This is what we now know today as the West Wing and later an Oval Office. The behind-the-scenes influence she had in being a conduit of information for her husband during the Russo-Japanese War with a British diplomat in St. Petersburg that was sending her information that was valuable to Teddy Roosevelt and going through back channels and not official channels so the information would be protected. And of course, as we know, Teddy Roosevelt wins the Nobel Peace Prize for his successful efforts in negotiating that war, but we like to think Edith Roosevelt had a lot to do with helping him.
It's incredible how, you know, many of the first ladies embrace the role, make it their own. Do we have any examples, Anita, of first ladies who their husband becomes president, but they're the politician, they're the ones who've fought all their life for this, and the first lady isn't that interested or is overwhelmed or just isn't cut out for it?
Well, Eleanor Roosevelt was one. She did not want to become First Lady. She had a very successful a career of her own already, and she felt that she would be constrained in the role.
From New York City, Eleanor Roosevelt lost her parents and became an orphan at the age of 10. She was the First Lady from 1933 to 1945 and was the first to really use her power and influence for activism, especially around civil and women's rights.
First of all, she was writing a daily column. She had a weekly radio broadcast. This is all before she came to the White House. She was a political activist.
Was she able to keep that going, Anita, when she went into the White House?
Great question on that, because the president did not want her to have a very public role. She wanted to continue to do
it. In case it damaged him?
Well, you know, again, let's think about, you know, women's role in society. Some of her policies and interests, particularly on human rights and civil rights, were not necessarily his, and not necessarily ones that his advisors thought would be winning policies. Now, we know, of course, she is known to be a champion of civil rights and human rights.
To make people everywhere conscious of the importance of human rights and freedoms.
She found a way to become so well-known, so well-liked, so active, including having press conferences only for women.
And she was making so much noise that she even had the KKK, who were out for her as well.
Yes, exactly, particularly her activism.
In 1938, while attending a conference in Birmingham, Alabama, whites were instructed to sit on one side of the hall and blacks on the other.
The group that was hosting her had her seated with the whites. She refused to do that. She had her chair moved to the middle of the aisle so that she was not showing favoritism to one or the other. Small gesture, but big impact.
But we talk about now today viral moments.
Yes.
I mean, of the day, that must have been an incredible moment.
That was a moment basically saying, you know, what was right versus what was wrong.
We must want our fellow human beings to have rights and freedoms which give them dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Nixon, just how do you feel starting out on another campaign?
They're always exciting, and the one that started in New Hampshire couldn't have been more so.
And Anita, I want to ask you about who you believe is one of the most underrated first ladies in history, and that is Mrs. Nixon.
Pat Nixon was a very active and engaged first lady.
Well, these are very exhausting experiences.
I've done it so many times that I don't, and also my heart is in it. I'm a willing volunteer.
Is the most traveled first lady in history, 81 countries. During an earthquake in Peru, about 2 years into the presidency of President Nixon, she travels there after a devastating earthquake nearly killed nearly half the population.
Mrs. Nixon, the people of Peru, they are conscious of what you have done for them.
But yet she went there and she brought these supplies, brought the compassion and generosity of the American people.
And I want to say this to the television audience. I made my mistakes.
And yet, you know, it's the issues of Watergate that really overshadowed all of her contributions.
Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything.
And all she had done for people with disabilities as well. And she used to say, people are my project, isn't that right?
Yes, she did. And in fact, on all of her foreign travels that I mentioned, she always wanted a schedule that was people who were marginalized and needed her voice. And that's the one thing she did to the White House, too, is made, well, long before there was an Americans with Disabilities Act, she's the one that installed the ramps in the White House for people, tours for the blind, tours at night for women who were working and coming into the workforce. I mean, she really, it was a remarkable first lady.
I think the most difficult task of all is to be surrounded all the time. You don't have enough what I call blessed aloneness.
Anita, we could talk about this all day, but we'll finish with one that's close to the hearts of Irish people. John F. Kennedy, of course, his wife, Jacqueline Kennedy. Tell me a bit about her role as First Lady, as short as it was.
As a 31-year-old woman who comes into the White House reluctantly, not really liking politics, was not an activist First Lady, certainly, but she chose an issue that her husband did not want her to do. Going back to your other question about historic preservation, he thought it would be perceived as elitist, but she pursued this. Her protection, preservation of the White House, creating the White House Historical Association, which you know, our mutual friend Stuart McLaren, opened up the White House to people through a televised interview. More Americans saw the White House on that February 14th, 1962 than they had ever seen before.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a press report over the wires that the President of the United States has been the victim of an assassination.
And of course, tragically organizing that state funeral for her husband.
And this, the funeral, of course, you know, of course, she watches her husband murdered in front of her eyes, and within a number of days, of course, orchestrates and leads and plans a state funeral that allowed the country to grieve and to watch this young family and her stoicism and her strength and grace, to allow the country to really honor her husband. She worried what his legacy would be. She was already hearing, you know, murmurs that there was not much that he had accomplished. She made it her business to preserve his legacy and full story of John F. Kennedy.
All of you who have written to me know how much we all loved him, and that he returned that love in firm measure.
Anita McBride, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Colm. I've enjoyed this a lot.
And that was Colin Flynn reporting there. He was talking to Anita McBride about the lives and legacies of America's first ladies.